Keelan, can you hear me? Hello,
yes, we can. We can hear okay. you in Zoom.
Great. Is this Rachel?
No, this is Megan, but Keelan will be the clerk today. Yeah, she just hasn't Keelan unmuted the room yet.
Hi, Mayor.
Okay, good. Hi. Let me know when you're ready to go.
Okay, everybody's getting set up right now. I think we're ready.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Wednesday afternoon, January 4th session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Good afternoon. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Gonzalez.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. So we have one item today. That's our legislative agenda, but it's broken down into two separate elements. Could you please read item 17? Oh, actually, let's hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or the first readings of ordinances. Written testimony may be submitted to cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so that everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify, unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually.
All right, thank you very much. We have two items today, two reports. Could you please read item number 17 and item number 18?
Item 17, accept the City of Portland 2023 federal legislative and regulatory agenda. And item 18, accept the City of Portland 2023 state legislative agenda.
Colleagues, this afternoon we're considering the final 2023 legislative, both the federal legislative and the regulatory agenda, as well as the 2023 state legislative agenda for approval. The federal and state teams at the Office of Government Relations have been hard at work continuing to connect with council offices and bureau staff to incorporate the feedback we provided them during the work session we had back on November 29th. I just want to take one brief moment to thank the OGR team and acknowledge the time and the work that went into developing and further refining the agendas that we have before us today. I look forward to working with the OGR team on all of these items. Nils Tullstrom, Eric Knoll, and Jack Arriaga from OGR have joined us today to present on these agendas and answer any questions that may arise. I'll hand this off to the interim director of OGR, Nils Tullstrom, to provide an overview of the two agendas. But also, colleagues, at this particular point, I'm going to remain on the call, of course, but I'm going to turn the gavel over to Commissioner Ryan at this point. Welcome, Nils.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Good afternoon. As the Mayor indicated, my name is Nils Tilstrom. I am the Interim Director in the Office of Government Relations. And I am joined by Eric Knoll, our State Relations Manager, and Jack Arriaga, our Federal Relations Manager. We will be presenting the final versions of the 2023 federal legislative and regulatory agenda and the 2023 state legislative agenda. This is for your consideration and acceptance. So I will walk through the work our office has done to get us to this point and cover the items that have, and we will cover the items that have changed since we met in our November 29th work session. Before that, I want to also take a moment and thank our entire team at the Office of Government Relations, and particularly I want to call out the work of Senator Jambaz Lawrence, our Small Bureau and Equity Manager from the Office of Equity and Human Rights, who has worked with us throughout this process, and you'll see that work reflected in the preamble in both agendas, which center racial equity and disability equity and language throughout both agendas. As a reminder, these agendas documents will guide the city's lobbying work during the 2023 session, legislative session in Salem, as well as the first session of the 118th Congress. Reflective of council's adopted emergency resolutions, the top line focus of both these agendas address the urgent needs that the city faces today in homelessness, public safety, behavioral health, and affordable housing, among other priorities. These agendas are big and strategic because as the city, we are facing big and challenges that need to be faced strategically. The road to building the city's state and federal agendas began in July 2022 when the Office of Government Relations put out a call for issues to bureau and council offices. The input we received was followed by outreach that we conducted to vet issues with state legislators, congressional offices, council offices, subject matter experts, city attorneys, community-based organizations, and other important stakeholders. We then distilled this information into draft documents we discussed in work session on November 29th. And since then, we have previewed the draft with state legislatures, governor-elect's office, congressional offices, community partners, and made materials available publicly on our website. So first, I want to turn to the 2023 federal legislative and regulatory agenda. The city's federal relations manager, Jack Arriaga, will walk through the changes we've made in the draft since our work session in November.
Jack, great. Thanks, Nils. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. Again, for the record, my name is Jack Arriaga. My pronouns are he and him, and I'm the federal relations manager in OGR. Thank you for the opportunity to present this 2023 federal legislative and regulatory agenda. The report before you today is very similar to what you saw during the November 29th work session. As we discussed then, there are seven policy priorities in the agenda that contain numerous opportunities for engagement and action at the federal level. The first three are structured to reflect the shared priorities previously adopted by the Portland City Council. Those are addressing homelessness and housing stability, community safety and behavioral health, and economic recovery and development. The other four priorities included in the agenda are racial justice and civil rights, climate and environmental justice, infrastructure investment, and finally, maintaining local authority and opposing preemption. I'll very briefly describe the few substantive changes that have been made to the agenda draft since the November work session. I'll skip over a small number of minor edits made to syntax or word choice that were done simply for clarity, but please let me know if you have any questions on these or any other aspect of the agenda. First, introductory paragraphs were added under each of the priority items. They're similar to what has been included in previous years.
Jack, excuse me. There's nothing we're supposed to look at. There's no visuals on the screen.
There is not. Okay. We have copies of the agenda that if they haven't been distributed to you, we have extras, but yep. So under each of those priority sections, there are introductory paragraphs that were added that are similar to what was included in previous year's agendas, that language has been updated for this year. And then the other two main changes, second, under the section for addressing homelessness and housing stability,
There was an item added to support policies that close the minority homeownership gap by expanding the number of first-time homebuyer tools for low and moderate income households. And then the last substantive change was an item added under racial justice and civil rights section that explicitly reflects council action supporting abortion rights and the federal protection of access to comprehensive reproductive health care. So those are the only significant changes made between the work session draft and the document before you. Are there any questions or comments on the 2023 federal legislative and regulatory agenda before I hand it back to Interim Director Tilstrom? Great, seeing none.
Thank you, Council. Now I want to recognize Eric Knoll, who's our State Relations Manager, to go over the changes in the 2023 state legislative agenda.
Thank you, Niels. Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners, for the record, my name is Eric Knoll. I use he, him pronouns, and I serve as the State Government Relations Manager with OGR. The state legislative agenda for 2023 has five priorities: housing and homelessness, community safety and behavioral health, economic recovery and development, environmental justice, climate and infrastructure, and local funding and authority. I'll briefly walk through the updates to the state legislative agenda since the November work session based on feedback we received during the work session and from your offices in the period since. Changes to the substance of the agenda were made in two of the categories, the community safety category and the environmental justice category. Across the document, we did change the subheader term from initiative to priority for clarity, and applied those subcategories to only the top three: housing, community safety, and economic recovery, to further emphasize the importance of those priorities to council in the upcoming session. That change to the headers was the only change in the housing and homelessness section. In the community safety and behavioral health section of the agenda, the narrative statement was slightly reframed for clarity. The behavioral health resources bullet was amended to add reference to expediting the Beacon project and establishing a Medicaid eligible stabilization center in Portland, and added the word services after the term crisis stabilization. The Measure 110 bullet point was edited slightly for clarity. The DPSST bullet point was moved from a policy position to the priority category, and the words awaiting training were added at the end of the sentence. No substantive changes were made to the economic recovery and development section. In the environmental justice, climate, and infrastructure section, the priority and policy position designations were removed for clarity. We reframed the transportation-related bullet points in that section based on feedback we received to read and focus on a bullet point dedicated to stable transportation funding and recognizing the Interstate Bridge Replacement Project in that conversation in the 2023 session, and a second bullet point in support of reduction of carbon emissions from the transportation sector. No changes were made to the local funding and authority section. And with that, that's the summary of changes in the document you see before you. Thank you for your time, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any questions now, or should we, how about if we go to community input?
Sounds good.
Testimony. We have anyone signed up for public testimony?
We do. We have two people signed up.
Okay. Let's do that first. Okay. Keelan, go ahead.
So first up,
Nels, I suggest you all hang out up here. Unless someone comes up to testify, of course. Oh, they're in the house?
We do have one person who will testify in person, and it's Ann Casper.
Forget what I just said. Have a nice seat. Yeah. It's all yours.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners and President Ryan. My name is Ann Casper. I'm from the Global Mental Health Peer Network. I appreciate very much all the work you've done on this. It looks like my movement, the mental health civil rights movement, wasn't informed of how to give input into this, into these things. So some things I would look at under this, I would change is actually before giving more money or more support to the Portland Street Response, I would like a fair and good academic study done on it, independent. It wasn't done independently before, and our questions were not asked. And this, that data is still not asked for. I've talked with Greg Townsend, and it's still not asked for. And people are getting paid, the peers who have mental health experience are getting paid still $30,000 less than somebody else. That doesn't make sense if it's a mental health program. So let's look into it, do some studies, make sure it works for everybody. Another thing that I would look into is supporting the Office of Recovery, the United States Office of Recovery. I was very privileged to be invited to go speak and help form it in the summer, and it is for addictions and mental health. And the director came here in July and visited us, and I had him visit with some people from Lincoln High School. Actually, they formed their own club. We have to look into mental health for young people, how it works for them. Asking for more inpatient care is not going to work for the young people, and it actually doesn't work for us either. What I don't see here also are asking for funding for alternatives, which means peer respites. We closed the drop-in centers years ago. So if you're houseless and you have a mental health issue, there's a lot of stigma against you, and so you have no place to go. There is a clubhouse here, but that's just one small place. We need places for women to go, especially, and help because, and there's just so much stigma in the, I'd say the houseless advocates, as well as the addiction advocates towards people with mental health. So if there's any way to get our voices in here to make sure that we're funding things that work for all of us, that'd be great. I'd also like to mention your supporting Measure 110. That actually took out a percentage of statewide annual funding for mental health, unfortunately. So when we're doing new programs, let's see what happens with everything else. I do want to say, please support the ECIDA Enhanced Crisis Intervention Team at the Portland Public Police. Believe it or not, about 50-60% of the time, the people with mental health issues will go towards the police person and not towards the person, so not towards the clinician, because clinicians for us means being locked up. It means being put in systems that don't allow us to heal. We know what Unity Hospital is like. I helped build it, unfortunately. We need some accountability to the system so no one gets hurt, and we do and can heal. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Next up for item 18, we have Dan Handelman.
Could I just ask Anne a question? Sorry, I was slow to raise my hand. Really? Anne, can you come up for just a sec, just so I can hear you?
Yes.
First of all, thank you for testifying today. I appreciate it. I appreciate your many, many years of advocacy and support in the community around mental health. My basic question is this. Here we have an opportunity before us. Obviously, the city of Portland finds itself engaging more and more in social services. That is historically the purview of county and state government. Mm-hmm. But given what we're experiencing on our streets, we feel the necessity of being able to respond effectively. Our police officers, the behavioral health unit, our EMTs, the firefighters, and now, of course, Portland Street Response. And I share some of the concerns that you expressed, that there does not appear to be an overall coordinated strategy starting from the state level and working its way down to the street level at the municipal government level. I'm just curious, as an advocate and as a professional, is there a table currently convened that you are aware of that is discussing all of these to put together a potential long-term comprehensive strategy on how to improve the mental health system in Oregon at the county level and at the local level in a comprehensive manner? Is there somewhere else we need to be plugged in that we're not plugged in?
I actually don't know where you're plugged in at this moment, because Mayor Wheeler, I hope too that we can have a discussion on this as well. And I'd like to bring the 20-year-olds with me that I'm mentoring in this advocacy thing. I don't know a table like that. I do know that the tables that are set, basically set, don't have our mental health, civil rights movement at the table. And I was very lucky through your police people in your office, Mayor Wheeler, to get on the Portland Street Response Planning Commission. But besides me trying, you know, having to sneak on through somebody else, we're not invited there. We actually know the answers. And I also like to say to be very cautious. Mental health ways of doing things and addiction ways of things are just different. We're coming from different philosophies, different schools. So when you do that, when you do bring these tables together, make sure that it's done in a very respectful manner. There's still a lot of mental health stigma. Let's just put it bluntly, okay? And I saw that done in Washington, D.C. or Maryland when I was at that meeting very well. I don't see, honestly, I don't see a table like that yet, Mayor Wheeler. I do know the new director of mental health, the state of Oregon. She's wonderful. So we've got some good people to work with. I see some hope. And honestly, coming from my perspective, I don't see any politicians at the city, state, or federal level from Oregon speaking to what we ask for. So maybe we need to be at the tables and talk more, make sure those things are addressed in our ways, because some of them do work. Another thing I want to mention too is about immigrants and refugees and people who don't speak English. If you remember Mejias Poot, what happened to him in the hospital, he was shot and killed because he didn't speak Spanish, he spoke indigenous language. And I think that a new type of mental health, quote unquote, treatment could work, and looking at what communities do together. A lot of mental health treatment is just individual, and it doesn't include the family whatsoever. Is there family or what we call natural supports? Because once you leave those systems, whether it's inpatient system or let's say a housing system, you go back to what you know, your family or your the family that you choose. So we need to think holistically how to add that. And if I could help you with that table, let me know. I don't know of it yet.
So yeah, I see a huge opportunity here with a new governor, with a new county chair. I'm certainly interested in the mental health issues. It just seems like there's a great opportunity here, and I don't want to waste it. Any rate, thanks, Anne, as always, for your thoughtful commentary.
If I could also add, Mary Wheeler, I will never forget what you did when, remember Cascade Behavioral Healthcare, right? They lost money over a weekend, and we brought services back to thousands and thousands. You did that. I will never forget the service and the great management you did in that issue. So I hold hope you will do well for us in the future.
Right back at you. Thank you. Thank you, President Ryan.
Sure. Anyone else have any questions? Let's go on to the next testimony. Thank you, Anne.
Next up, we have Dan Handelman.
Hello, good afternoon. This is Dan Handelman. I'm a co-founding member of Portland Cop Watch. I use he, him pronouns. Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners Maps, Rubio, and Ryan. And a welcome to Commissioner Gonzalez. Portland Cop Watch has been promoting police accountability through civilian action since 1992. And there are some concerns we have with the state legislative agenda. We're very concerned about asking the state to relax laws requiring a criminal predicate to begin recording community members. This would appear to weaken the state's anti-spying law, ORS 181A.250. If an officer is engaging with a community member in an interaction that would lead to a misconduct investigation, more often than not, that interaction begins with an officer's suspicion of criminal conduct. The cameras are being sold to the community as an accountability tool. They should not be used as surveillance tools. Second, there are laws that you're seeking to change protecting public employee privacy, and it seems to address the alleged threats against police officers following deadly force incidents. Portland Cop Watch opposes both the substance of the new policy that withholds officers' names for 2 weeks rather than 24 hours, and the process by which it was created. The DOJ agreement requires a public review of police policies before they're changed. So we're asking both that the new rule be rescinded and restored back to the 24-hour rule, and that so long as our understanding is clear that the legislative fix is to protect personal information only, not public employee information, those protections also should extend to private individuals listed in public records. When the records were released about whether Lieutenant Jeff Nia was improperly communicating with alt-right protesters, community members' personal phone numbers were published. If the new rule isn't rescinded about officer names, we would like to hear a guarantee from council that if this law passes, that rule will then revert back to the 24 hours previously established. Finally, on this topic, while redacting phone numbers and addresses of the public employees may be appropriate, the city and state in which they reside should be public information. You may notice that not a lot of people signed up to testify about this legislative agenda today or even to address these items about police accountability that we're raising here. One reason for this is that the document is vaguely worded in the two instances I've highlighted for you, that we had no idea what the city was asking for. The language says, pursue a technical fix to statutes governing body-worn cameras to ensure the City of Portland can effectively implement a body-worn camera program. Very vague. And then protect the safety and personal information of public employees and retirees, clarifying privacy protections in state law. Also very vague. For a city that values transparency, this is not an acceptable way to publish the goals, which are supposed to represent some 650,000 people when you appear in Salem. More specifics make for better governance. I will add in closing that as part of a peace group opposed to violence, it's troubling to hear people refer to bullet points, particularly in reference to police issues, and I hope you'll keep that in mind as you have discussions moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Commissioner Ryan, Ann signed up as well for 18. Did you?
So this one has to do with the statewide, right? So Portland is a city in trauma, and I think we forget that. I just want to thank each of you for the work you're doing, and for each of you who've been yelled at while you're doing your work. I mean, I was personally yelled at last summer for speaking up for immigrant and refugee women, new types of peer support for them. And it took me a month and a half to get back from that trauma response, because I didn't expect that somebody from my tribe basically would be screaming at me because I was speaking up for women. And I also look at the city. My family's been here 130 years. My grandfather, great-grandfather used to do insurance for Mr. Fred Meyer. We're really, I think a lot of us are really sad to watch the city at this state. So things go down, as we know in addictions, you have your bottom level. Maybe Portland's coming to the bottom level yet, still holding on to hope. Be careful if you look for outside answers. New York City's answer to getting people locked into hospitals is not a real answer. And in fact, they've got legal people working on that now to stop that. And Mayor Adams, I know because I do a lot of work in New York, Mayor Adams didn't tell all his staff about that. So the health department and the police department were shocked when he came out with that. So let's be careful if we're looking for answers someplace else. We're Portland, we're different. And there are alternative ways to heal. And especially Portlanders, we do work together. We are nicer, sweeter than other people. Maybe we allow too much. But by allowing, people can find their own answers. Healing is an inside job. And when you're put into a system, for example, a hospital system, where they say everything you say is wrong, or I went to Mayor Wheeler a few years ago and asked him for help because women were telling me they're being touched sexually at Unity Hospital. And no one believed, and the doctors wouldn't, nurses wouldn't. So I got Chair Gafori and Mayor Wheeler, and we're going to work on it. And somehow that just got passed over. I mean, you know me, I call for weeks and months and bother people, but it got passed over, and have to let that go. So these systems are old, archaic systems. There's better ways to get mental health wellness. And I hope for each of you that you yourself stay well, because the city is not easy right now. That you find something fun that you do. On Monday mornings, I go to teach Japanese at a preschool. And so it is not mental health civil rights, but I need that to bring me back to wellness and happiness. And Commissioner Gonzalez, you're starting off now, so good luck on this. And one more thing I would like to speak to is young people. So when I talk to and work with people who are high schoolers, who are middle schoolers, who are in college, they're saying this mental health system doesn't work for them. And even in high school, they go to the high school counselors. The counselors say they don't have time to talk to them. So let's make something different. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
That completes testimony.
Okay, colleagues, I assume we have some questions. And so we'll have the crew come back up. Thanks, Nils. You want to go first? Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thank you, gentlemen, for a comprehensive report and the work session. I just would first observe that the city is very directly impacted by our government partners' ability to address mental illness and addiction. This is something we're seeing and feeling every day on the streets of Portland. Niles, when you briefed me a few weeks ago on my onboarding, we discussed a bit Measure 110, the palatability of potential reform there at the state level. I certainly took at the time that there may not be huge appetite for leadership at the state level on Measure 110 reform. What's your take at this point in time? You know, I'll put it to both of you in terms of whether there'll be a champion to tackle some of maybe some of the unintended consequences of Measure 110 and the whole nine yards.
Commissioner, thank you for the question. I think what I would first say is the feasibility of reforming Measure 110 depends on who and how they want to reform the measure and the outcomes. On one hand, there's a focus publicly and among legislators on what I would describe as the front end of Measure 110, on the interactions of individuals with the criminal justice system and the penalties or the changes to the penalty structure related to possession of small substances or small amounts of illegal substances. And then on the quote unquote back end of Measure 110, where a new funding mechanism for treatment recovery was established through the Oregon Health Authority. We are aware of a joint work group being formed between the House and the Senate to examine a suite of reforms. Politically, I think the appetite is more focused on reforming the grant process and the very public focus on how slow it has been to get those dollars out the door, particularly with redirecting that large of amount of cannabis tax dollars to this purpose. And not seeing the results yet from that. So I would expect this session that's where the focus and the reforms will be. There will be a conversation on the front end, but it's unclear what that specific policy solution looks like at this point in time. I will also comment and say I believe there's a good opportunity for synergy with the county in addressing reforms and expediting the disbursement of funding from that grant program.
Thank you. I'm good for now.
Commissioner, your microphone's off.
I apologize about that. Having spent the last couple years on the League of Cities board, just curious about, and now I'm coming off, can you tell me a little bit about how our agenda compares to other agendas across the state?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner. I will say, you know, with my 6 years of experience at the city doing this work, we have by far, I think, one of the most robust legislative agendas to meet the needs of our city. We are a participant, as we are a member of the League of Oregon Cities, and they initiate their policy setting process in March, April, and May after short sessions. And so we were fully engaged in each of their 8 policy committees as a lobbying team and with city subject matter experts influencing recommendations to the statewide ballot. And there's, I believe, a good amount of crossover between the priorities of the League of Oregon Cities and the City of Portland priorities. We also, as part of our agenda setting process, work with our partners at the regional counties, Metro, other cities like Hillsborough, Gresham, and Eugene, and Beaverton, to identify additional areas of alignment. And so more often than not, many of the items in the legislative agenda represent areas of partnership where the city is not standing out alone. Obviously, there are areas where the City of Portland steps out and leads, and that is, I think, well reflected in this legislative agenda before you. But we take seriously and make very intentional steps in the 6 months leading up to this this session to bring you an agenda that represents partnership and synergy with other levels of government, other partner governments, and partner entities.
Thank you. I just have one more question. Also, we're all very clear about what our city priorities are during this time, but can you tell me what the landscape looks like around climate and EJ, environmental justice, and any traction that we'll get during this session? Just your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you for the question. We saw committee assignments come out from the legislature last week, and that's
The committee assignments tend to be one of the first signals that leadership in both chambers give to their priorities for the session from both caucuses, in terms of which committees are assigned, which are folded into other committees, et cetera. So we, you know, to set a broader context, are seeing a committee in the House Behavioral Health and Healthcare, Committee on Higher Education, Committee on Energy and Environment, and we see an Environment Committee in both chambers with membership of legislators who are outspoken supporters of environmental justice and climate-focused initiatives. With the significant transition in state leadership, I will say the agendas and the specific policy focuses of both caucuses are still mollifying and coming together as we see a very large freshman class of legislators in the building. But environmental justice and climate does remain, I believe, a top focus of leadership in both chambers.
Thank you.
Everyone. It's really following up on Commissioner Rubio's question. Mine was going to be tapping into the network across the state, which is through the League of Cities is one avenue. This is a really ambitious state agenda, which, you know, which it should be. But so how are we going to move the coalition and prioritize within these? Like, what are some suggestions you can give on, you know, it's all about relationships. So give advice to those of us that are up here on how we can be helpful. Give advice to all those people that are tuned in to this cable station watching this meeting. Like, what can we do to get behind this agenda? And then I see a few that I think would be very popular in all parts of the state. I just wanted to hear some of your thoughts on that.
All right. Thank you for the question, Commissioner. I think it starts by recognizing that we are not the only ones who prioritize these items. And these are shared priorities with your colleagues in the legislature, in other city governments, advocacy groups, where there's a lot of opportunity for coalition work. And as part, again, as part of the agenda setting process, part of the work we do in meeting with our partners is to set the table for that work going into session. Not all of these items in the agenda represent their own bills that the city is introducing and running on our own. Oftentimes it's us stepping in and joining an active coalition or an active effort. For example, in the interim, Representative Noss and Senator Lieber led a behavioral health work group with four subcommittees examining a suite of options across the spectrum of behavioral health care. And that may result in additional legislation this session that we can join in the conversations in. I think there are specific opportunities for this council to engage. Our team will work to identify days where each of you can join us in Salem to meet with legislators. One of those examples is LOC, the League of Cities, hosting City Day at the Capitol on January 25th. And we will ensure that that opportunity is available to you all to participate in. But it's a 5-month session, and opportunities are abundant for that engagement and for that coalition work.
So when I look at, say, community safety and behavioral health, and I want to start by saying I really appreciate the way that we arrange this. It's much easier to read, and it's under our priorities. So thank you for that. Edit since the work session. Like, when you look at number 4, the increased capacity of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to reduce the academy backlog for police officers awaiting training, would that be an example of something where throughout the state you could get bipartisan support for that?
Yes, and that
I thought I've set a softball.
That support already exists. It's, you know, I think it starts by recognizing that this is a challenge not unique to the city of Portland, and one that is facing all law enforcement agencies across the state, from the state police to Portland Police Bureau to smaller jurisdiction law enforcement agencies. There are levels of engagement both with the legislature and the Ways and Means process and the budget setting, but as early as engagement with the governor-elect as she frames out her recommended budget for the 2023-25 biennium.
Okay. And maybe that's what I'd like to do now with this, is to look and see where we have some pretty good opportunities to have statewide coalition building, where Portland doesn't necessarily have to lead, because in fact that might hurt it sometimes, but have other communities take the lead, and then we come in a supportive role. So have we gone to that level of strategy?
The short answer is yes.
Yeah, and
without, so, yeah, without going into detail item by item, yes.
That's helpful to hear. Anything else? Jack, are you feeling left out? We haven't asked a question about the federal agenda.
All right. I guess I'll just tack on. I think, you know, there are opportunities, you know, at, in terms of how to be successful. You know, I think showing up makes all the difference. And so if there are, you know, priorities in here that you're personally invested in, you know, please encourage, you know, we are in constant discussion with your staffs and looking for those opportunities, whether it's a flight to DC or an event, you know, here with a delegation member, to really bring those to the fore. And I encourage you all to see those as investments. You know, it's a long flight. It takes, you know, time out of your busy schedules to go to DC, but those are investments that can pay dividends in creating connections and bringing ideas and showing leadership that then, you know, brings those resources back to bear here in the city.
Thanks, Jack. Commissioner Rubio.
Sorry, I just have one more question.
Oh. Supposed to have a conversation. Go.
So, here we go. So do you anticipate that the Senate will move on any more outstanding appointments, particularly the one that we're, you know, we're interested in, the FCC? We have some nominees in the queue. Just curious. I hadn't heard anything about it.
Yeah. There has been reporting that President Biden will renominate Gigi Son for the FCC position that is vacant. So there, the Senate, having gained one more Democrat in the Democratic caucus, they now have an outright majority rather than a 50-50 majority, with Vice President breaking that tie. So that will make a tremendous difference in their ability to move nominations out of committee, which previously, I won't get into the legislative details, but required some agreements and extra steps in the legislative process to bring those nominations to the floor. So I think the Senate will continue to move appointments, and frankly, because of the challenges to advancing legislation now between both chambers, giving divided government, and as you've seen in the news, you know, the House is going to be a little bit unpredictable. The Senate will very much be focused on nominations, and so I can't tell you specifically on the FCC nomination how that's going to play out. I think that's still unclear, but it is a top of mind, and it's probably, if you start talking about nominations, that's the one that most people are asking about. So I know it will be a focus.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
Sorry, I have one follow-up on federal that I should have asked in our work session, but I forgot. SALT deduction, any appetite, we think, for updating reform there? And by way of background, you know, City of Portland's a heavy tax region. We have to compete to retain that tax base. That deduction's important, not just for us, but a lot of U.S. cities. And just curious if, you know, any sense if there's any appetite for adjustment there.
Yeah, that's a question that I have to admit, I don't have a good crystal ball on that one. It was a major focus of, you know, states, certain states, particularly in Northeast states, but you know, Oregon falls in that category of having an interest there. It just was not something that found agreement in the last Congress. I'll have to give that some further investigation. I haven't seen that being raised as a priority. I think given the divide in government, it would be challenging to reach you know, an agreement on tax reform. There was talk around some provisions, tax-related provisions, being plugged into the end-of-year omnibus bill that fell off. So I think that's a signal of, you know, the lack of ability to find agreement on even some of the most, you know, the most easy to compromise on measures. So I don't see it imminent, but we'll certainly keep an eye on it.
Thank you,
Commissioner Rubio. Your hand. It's just all right. So I think it's more of a process question as we go forward. And I apologize, I didn't have time to do this dot connecting myself. But when I look at the federal agenda and the state agenda, there's some dots that connect.
Sure.
And that's, of course, what you want to find.
Yeah.
Because we're the implementers, and then the revenue comes from on high. And so we want to free that up. So If you could, during the session, notice where we have the through line from federal to state.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that would alert people like us to know that we could pivot to where there's actually an opportunity for a victory.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we...
And I realize that happens sometimes in ways that we can't predict on January 4th.
Well, we've been attuned to the potential nature of that, you know, through the building of our agendas. And so, you know, we... it is definitely something top of mind as we move through the course of the implementation of these. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Great.
Anything else? Okay.
All right.
I think, do you have anything?
I just wanted to please. Thank you all for the discussion. I thought it, I appreciated it. And I just want to flag as we begin this work next Thursday morning on January 12th, the city will be hosting legislative breakfast with the Portland State legislative delegation, and it's the first step of engagement after the finalizing of these agenda of this agenda or the state agenda, at least. We've been working with your teams to ensure participation in that event. And I just again want to sincerely thank the team in the Office of Government Relations, our help, our staff support through. Asena Jambas Lawrence at the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and then also to the bureaus for their immense and deep expertise in helping pull some of these items together. And then also, I just want to thank Council for their leadership in this work. So thank you very much.
I'm just now curious, this will be my third. I know the mayor has been around longer, but will this actually be a breakfast, or are we going to be on Zoom again?
I'm pleased to say that we are back in person.
Oh, good.
For a breakfast, and we'll be putting the catering order in this afternoon.
Oh, nice. Wow. Got real. Okay.
Got real.
Yeah. All right. You're all good?
Yep.
We're all good.
All right.
So thank you for your time. And now do we have a motion to accept the reports? Can we do reports, or do we have to do them one at a time?
We need to do them one at a time.
All right.
So all right, I move.
See if I can do a shortcut.
Great.
Is that the mayor?
I'll second.
Like the Wizard Somebody of Oz.
Moved.
Like,
I think that was Renee moved acceptance of the report on the 2023 federal legislative and regulatory agenda. I'll second that one.
Presiding Officer Ryan, Mr. Mayor, can we do that over again? It would be great if our newest member, Commissioner Gonzalez, felt like making the motion. I'd be happy to.
Mayor, I think there was a tape delay there. So, would you like to go ahead and make a
I don't want to steal your thunder, oh, sir. You know, I so move.
And do we have a second?
Second.
Great. We moved and seconded on the first item. And Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
I just want to thank each of you here. I know this is a big job. There's a lot going on, and we have some big challenges. And as you said, a robust agenda, but we have a lot of faith in you and really appreciate your great work here. So for that, I.
Ryan.
Yeah, Nils and your team, Jack and Eric, thank you so much for being here today. I think back to our work sessions, I felt like there were more than one, but maybe there's just one. It was the briefings and such. I thought that this evolved really well, and the final document came along, and I really appreciate the time and effort you must have put in over the holidays to get it to that point. I also appreciate that we are more focused on our priorities and having the legislation tied to our strategic priorities. It's just more crisp and clear than ever before. Sometimes being new, it felt like we had a lot of tactical items, but it was difficult sometimes to see where we're going to have impact. And so this feels less, this feels just wise in terms of how we've aligned those arrows. And I appreciate that. And I'm just thrilled that we're fighting to keep families and individuals housed. We're establishing measures that really support those who are houseless on the streets. We have had very difficult conversations, and we're Portland, so we have a lot of different conversations, and we want everything to be perfect. And then in that, there's no action. And so what's important is to stop the inaction of facing the crisis that we have on the ground. And I think what I see here is policies that support the earnest effort by this council and our colleagues in the local area to start building a better system. and it's going to be rough, but we have to start doing it. And we're tired. I'm tired of knowing that, like the person who spoke earlier, Anne, I'm an Oregonian that I was born and raised here. And it's embarrassing to see us constantly like 49th to 51st when it comes to how we're responding to mental health and behavioral health. And I do believe by being more bold and honest and creative in how we bring this innovation to the ground, that will in fact lift the stigma, because there isn't one family out there that can't relate to this issue, not one. So it's a really silly stigma that it even exists. So I'm really thrilled of my 3 years being here. This feels like the most comprehensive and aligned priority sets that we have. And I do see more through lines between the federal and the state agenda. And it's gonna be tough. So I also thank you for having the stomach and the chutzpah to represent the city. I will look forward to supporting you as you're down there representing us daily. And for us to be, for me, and I can only speak for myself and our office, to be adaptive and helpful when you need us to lean into our own relationships to help move the work. And so with that, I'm thrilled to vote aye.
Gonzalez.
Just want to thank you for your work and echo Commissioner Ryan's comments. I think the updates from the work session are helpful in framing the priorities. It's clarifying, so thank you for that work. I want to preface our work together that I think we are really at a historic moment in the city, and our interdependence on our government partners has never been more important than it is right now. So if I ask tough questions in the coming weeks and months, it's not so much directed at you per se, it's that this is just so mission critical for the city of Portland. And sometimes the city, it feels like there's a rawness to it. Our voters know how to find us. We're very accessible. We live and breathe every day when things are working well and when they're not working well. Sometimes that intensity may translate into how we converse with you. But again, I appreciate your work and look forward to teaming up with you on this in the coming weeks and months.
Maps.
I want to thank our government relations team for the excellent work they've done translating this council's vision into a legislative agenda. Now, in the 2 years that I have served on this council, I have learned many lessons, but one of the most important lessons I've learned is this. There's nothing wrong with Portland that cannot be fixed by what is right with Portland. But in order to get this moment in Portland's history right, Portland needs our federal and state partners at the table. If the federal government, state of Oregon, and city of Portland come together, we can reduce homelessness and increase the supply of affordable housing. By working together, we can make our streets safer. By working together, we can do a better job of helping our friends and neighbors suffering from mental illness and drug addiction. By working together, we can revitalize our economy and our neighborhoods. And by working together, we can combat climate change and rebuild and reimagine our city's infrastructure. Now, I know that accomplishing these goals will not be easy. However, I also know this: when the federal government, the state of Oregon, and city of Portland work together, we can accomplish great things. Which is why, at our first council meeting of this new year, I'm glad to have this opportunity to commit to working with our partners in the federal government and the state government to build a better country, a more prosperous Oregon, and a healthier Portland. For these reasons and more, I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I almost don't want to speak because I really want what Commissioner Mapps just said to settle in. I could not agree with you more. And yeah, there is no question, as I said this morning, we're experiencing this unprecedented number of simultaneous worst case scenarios. We all know it. We can articulate the problems. It's a lot harder to put the solutions together. If they were easy, I think they would have been done now. But I'm really proud of the work this council has done over the last several years. I think we've laid the foundation to address many of the problems that Commissioner Mapps articulated, and we've done it in partnership with our federal and our state governments. And I believe that this legislative agenda, and I'm speaking now to both of the reports, even though we're only voting on the legislative, federal legislative agenda, it reflects those partnerships. And yes, we need to strengthen them. We need to clarify roles. We need to continue to fight for flexibility and funding at the local level. But by and large, I believe we are taking the right steps that will show progress in the years ahead. And last but not least, I have almost an infinite faith in the people of this community to get through this difficult period of time in our history. Mingus, I always appreciate the way you frame these issues in terms of working together in collaboration. I think that's exactly the right tone to take. And this legislative agenda was crafted with that in mind, partnership and collaboration. Niels, Eric, and Jack, thank you for really putting a ton of time and energy into this. I think you got it just right. I vote aye.
Okay, that passes 5-0. So now we go on to 18. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that the number? 18, yeah. Please call the roll.
I move that we accept the report.
Oh, that's right. We have to do this again. Yeah. Yep. You want a second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Now, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Mapps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye.